We're here on Amanda Thomas.
Excuse me, do you care to reserve?
Two minutes,
yes, sir.
We are here on Amanda Thomas. This case is blessedly free of any factual issue. We're straight up on statutory legislation. And I think it's telling. The Commonwealth references it properly, so 18-2-10, which talks about it's the felony sentencing array, and in the last paragraph tags on this idea of additional suspended time.
Using the language shall.
Yeah, shall. Oh, we're not talking shall or may. That's over. Okay, that's not the issue. But that's the general sentencing statute, and it references it to be handled under 19.2295.2, which has a different genesis. Originally, we had 295, which said a defendant gets to enjoy the sentence imposed by a jury and no more, unless amended by statute, and that's where 295.2 comes in. But you'll notice in 295.2, there is no reference to an additional sentence suspended. It is strictly a reference to impose a term of post-relief supervision, not a post-relief, incarceration sentence to be suspended. It refers to a term of post-relief supervision, 6 months to 3 years. That range is not an issue. And
counsel,
yes.
Then tell me how, explain how would the court ever enforce, if it needed to enforce that supervision, if you didn't have up to, I think it provides for 6 months to 3 years,
Judge,
additional sentence, how would you?
I will quote the highest authority I can imagine. My daughter is a probation officer, and they complain about this very fact, that post-relief supervision has no teeth. That's not our problem. That's the legislature's problem. The best I can tease it out is that there are two sets of teeth. One of them, if a person has behaved themselves well in court, in jail, Ms. Thomas, for an example, she would get out about 6 months early. I'm making that up. It's about 85%, okay? But there would be some comeback time. And if she's out on post-relief supervision, reviewed and supervised by the parole board, that's important, not by the trial judge. Then a parole board warrant goes out if she misbehaves, and they have that much to consider. They may also have even smaller teeth of a contempt for not following the circuit court's order to be of good behavior and keep the peace. That's not the same teeth as a probation revocation, I'll concede that. But that's not our problem. It was the legislature that conceived it this way and referenced supervision by the parole board, not by the trial judge. And so we have that array, and of course, well, I'll get to the other point in a second. We had this discussion, I'll say it lovingly, with the judge for the second time with him. Wonderful judge, love him. And he talked at the sentencing hearing about how this was going to be supervised under 295.2. Then out comes the sentencing order, which is just a flat 10 years with 3 years suspended on active probation under the terms and conditions and supervised by this court, meaning the trial court. So if she misbehaves, she's back in front of Judge Geisler facing up to 3 years in prison above that jury sentence. And when you have 18-2-10, which is kind of the basic sentencing, but then you have the specific carve-out of 19-2-295 of what you do with a jury verdict, which is kind of different, and then that's been modified by 295.2 and says, okay, you've served the whole sentence under a jury verdict, we'll put you out on post-relief supervision 6 months to 3 years. Okay, and with the question that you raised about what's the penalty, I think that question gets the worst in a different fact pattern. Somebody's convicted of possession of a firearm as a violent felon. Maximum and minimum and mandatory are all the same, 5 years. That person would get out day for day on 5 years, and post-relief supervision would have no teeth at all. That's an interesting question. We don't have that here.
How is this case not controlled by Allard, the Allard case?
I can't answer that. I don't remember
okay.
What Allard said.
Okay.
Except for this, if it's the case that it came out in 2006, I'm terrible at remembering names, that's pre-Apprendi. And Apprendi doesn't show its face in this argument or in this appeal, but it is kind of a wall against which we have to be careful. That is a judge-enhanced sentence above what a jury imposed based on facts that the jury didn't consider. And that is a problem, okay? I think the way this statute avoids it and why I didn't raise it at this level or at this appeal is because 19.2295.2 does not impose an additional sentence. It imposes an additional period of supervision. And the penalty that the defendant is exposed to is finishing out the actual sentence that the jury had imposed. If they get out early for good behavior on 85% and misbehave, they have the other 15% to pay. But that's still within the jury verdict, and so I don't think it violates Apprendi. If you add 3 years above, like Judge Giesler did here, now you're into different territory, especially if you don't reference 19.2295.2, which he did not in his sentencing order. That may have been a clerical error, and the Commonwealth addresses this question of the basic rule that a court speaks by its orders. I can tell you in that last case that Judge Giesler and I are talking about at the sentencing hearing, we had a modification hearing within the 21 days. He gave that individual 3 years additional time. We had a modification hearing within the 21-day period, and he announced from the bench, I vacate my prior order and set this matter for further hearing. The order memorializing that was not signed until after the 21-day period, and this court said, you lose. You lose. So when the court announces my last order is vacated, that is nothing. That's wind in the trees, according to this court. So when he announces all his stuff about how I'm going to do post-release supervision at the sentencing hearing, but his order does not say word one about it, I think we're gone on that point.
Counsel, yeah. It certainly would have been nice if it had been specifically delineated in the order. I agree with you, it was not. However, as attached to the order and part of would have been the sentencing guidelines that the judge is required to sign. And that did have it delineated, didn't it?
It was in there. I didn't look. I kind of live by what judge's orders say. I would hate to be in the position of arguing in front of a judge that a post-sentence report or guidelines assessment actually trumps or modifies his order. I hate to be in front of this court and say that that modifies a court order.
I'm not asking you to argue that it trumps or that it doesn't, but I was just stating that it is there.
My response is this. I think that the order that was prepared was done by the clerk and was a boilerplate order, and she missed it. And it was in a transition between two different clerks, and it may have been a clerical error. But the fact is, that's what I've got. Now, it may be as simple as this court goes, well, that's crazy. Just send it back and let the judge clarify it. And maybe that's what we'll do. I think the order that was entered is a clear violation of this post-release supervision because it adds 3 years and doesn't even talk about post-release supervision. It puts this lady under active probation at risk of a three-year additional sentence if she misbehaves, active sentence if she misbehaves, with no reference to that code section under that order. The bigger issue, and maybe it's beyond, you know, you always want to just solve it the simplest way possible, and you're supposed to do it that way. A little guidance would help. I think it's telling. It's telling. When the Commonwealth is arguing in their closing at the sentencing hearing, they go, the Commonwealth says to the judge, I can't ask you to increase the sentence. Well, that Commonwealth attorney knew something that we're struggling with here. He knew he couldn't get 10 years out of a 7-year jury, and yet he did. And I think really the problem is we talk about splits in districts and circuits. We have a split within the 27th because other judges don't handle it this way. And for us in the trenches, it would be nice to know the process. And I'm going to yield the rest of my time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. For the Commonwealth, Mr. Jones.
Good morning, and may it please the court, I am John Jones for the Commonwealth, and we are asking the court to affirm Ms. Thomas's sentence because it did comply with the law. Under Code Section 18.2-10, the court, when it decided to impose the entire 7-year sentence, it had to add suspended time under 18.2-10. It could be between 6 months and 3 years, but it had to under that statute. Didn't have any discretion in that choice once it reached the point that it was going to impose the jury's entire sentence. And that suspended time exists to enforce the post-release supervision, to make sure that during the transition back into society that Ms. Thomas has adequate supervision and has a reason to behave herself.
And that's the case even without any written provision for that in the order, in the sentence?
Yes, Your Honor. I would argue that that happens by operation of law, that 18.2-10 requires the court to add that. There's no talismanic significance to mentioning the statute that authorizes that in the sentencing order. And so by operation of law, this occurs. And if the court had added 4 years as suspended sentence, that would be a problem, because that's not authorized by the statute. If the court had not added any time, that would have been probably an error, but I don't know where we'd be now. We probably be here on that.
So, counsel, basically what you're arguing is that no matter what's in the order, then therefore you have to have 6 months to 3 years added on, and it doesn't have to be delineated or specifically set out as post-release time.
Your Honor, what I'm saying is that it doesn't have to say post-release supervision pursuant to 18 or 19.2-295.2. Mm-hmm. You don't need that phrase. And what the court did here was place her on a three-year period consistent with the statute's mandate and place her on post-release conditions and terms that are consistent with the aims of 18.
Right. In his sentencing, Judge Giesler states that when he's handing down the sentence, but it doesn't appear, as counsel has argued earlier in the order, it does appear on the sentencing guidelines set out in that specific manner as he articulated once he handed down the sentence. And your statement is it doesn't matter as far as in the order.
My position is that the sentencing guidelines that you mentioned that was appended to the order, mm-hmm. and along with the court's statements at sentencing, are adequate to supplement and help us understand what the court meant to do by its order, which was to impose this pursuant to 19.2-295.2 and 18.2-10. I guess I'm hesitant to stake out the position that it just doesn't matter what the final order says, because that's obviously not true. But in this circumstance, we're okay.
Counsel, how do you respond to counsel's argument about application of the Apprendi scenario?
I can't, Your Honor. I noticed from looking at the transcript that that had been mentioned a little bit in passing in reference to some arguments that they had previously in another case, but since it wasn't teed up squarely by this appeal, I really haven't looked into that in depth. My impression on the limited research that I did was that Apprendi doesn't provide a problem for this sort of situation where the statute specifically, it's not just the judge adding to the jury's sentence without any statutory authorization. There is a statute that provides for this here, but again, I can't say that with great confidence without research. But again, we've got the Lamb case and the Latow case that talk about how these statutes exist to fill in where the parole system used to, before it was abolished, provide sort of training wheels for offenders to reenter society. When those were abolished, the General Assembly decided that we needed something else to prevent them from going straight from jail just to full-time citizen again, without any kind of help with the transition. And so this is what they've come up with. I believe it's the Latow case that talks about how probation is meaningless without a coordinate term of suspended sentence. The suggestion that the only thing that's okay to do is to put them on supervision, but that there's no serious way for the supervision to be enforced, especially whenever we're looking at in peri materia statutory or the statute of 18.2-10 that provides the enforcement mechanism clearly. And whenever you read those statutes together, then it's pretty clear what the General Assembly intended. One additional thing that I would bring up is that none of this was briefed about the proper nature or proper name of the supervisor, whether it should be the court or the DOC. To the extent that that's been raised now, I would argue that it's waived. It's not fairly within the bounds of the assignment of error, and we didn't brief it. So So beyond that, if the court has any more questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'd...
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Any rebuttal?
Maybe 15 seconds.
Yes, sir.
Just on that last point, he's exactly right. It's not in my brief. It is in the statutes of Virginia, however. Under 295.2, a violation is referred to the parole board. And the code, the sentencing order by Judge Geisler keeps that three-year period of probation in his court. It makes reference to a supervision that she will be supervised by the court, by the probation officer, not by the parole board. And I have lived through that where a person had exactly this situation out on post-relief supervision, had a probation violation letter filed into the court, dismissed at the motion of the Commonwealth because, whoops, this person was out on post-relief supervision. And while we were in court, the parole board violation warrant was served on the defendant who happened to be in custody, and he was marched out of the room because the 295.2 goes a different way. It goes to through the parole board. Does not come back to the trial court. And from a following the statutory scheme, let alone the due process issues, that's where this supervision is supposed to be under that scheme. Mm-hmm. And so it is significant. And I just want to get it right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll step down and greet counsel and then take up the Bistel versus Bistel case.
All rise.